It's time for Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Mat-Su Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky.
Well, folks, once again, it's time for another edition of Valley Edition. It's my great pleasure to welcome into the studio Terry Snyder, sitting in the sun.
Out of the wind.
Out of the wind. And also on the phone, Zaz Hollander. Do you have sun where you are, Zaz?
Yeah, up in Willow, it's sunny, although it did snow a little bit last night.
Oh, how about that? Okay.
Did it stick?
No, not really. Wow.
Okay, well, since we have used that four-letter word, snow, let us begin with since you covered this and wrote a very interesting article about the Hale brothers getting caught in an avalanche. For listeners who weren't aware of that and have yet to learn from their experience, a quick summary, please.
Yeah, so this was Israel and Joshua Hale and another of their brothers and a friend of them. Theirs were out snow machining last weekend in kind of East Alaska Range, the area near the Arctic Man. Event that's actually coming up, and they got themselves in the trouble, and they were the first to admit that they made some mistakes and wanted to talk about what happened so other people might not make the same mistakes. But kind of chief among the mistakes were just not analyzing the terrain they were in for avalanche danger, not having the physical tools to do that, not digging any pits, you know, not using any avalanche expertise. But then also not having all the right equipment that at this stage in the winter, spring, that really you should have any time, but especially now out there. And that would be, you know, beacons, probes, the tools that you can help yourself to dig out with. And so the two of them got incredibly lucky. Joshua was triggered an avalanche while he was on his snow machine and tried to outrun it on his snow machine. And He estimated he was going, when I was interviewing him, he said something like 150 to 200 miles an hour. I think I just said over 100 miles an hour.
Yeah.
He said that his snow machine could go 80 at full throttle on flat ground. And he was, you know, had been airborne and was sledding faster than the avalanche was going at that point. So his momentum was picked up by the snow underneath him. And he ultimately got pitched off his machine and got moved in the avalanche through a gully where he could feel it kind of starting to really compress on him, and then ran out beneath the gully, and he was kind of miraculously able to dig himself out. He had a foot sticking out of the snow and kind of went from there. His brother Israel, who is pretty well known in the valley and in kind of sports circles, he lost both of his legs in 2012 when he was pulled over in Anchorage trying to check out a problem with his trailer. He was pinned up against it by a car that came up behind him. And he has since really made a name for himself as a competitive snow machiner. But when the avalanche hit, he didn't know it, and he had kind of rolled his sled, was trying to get back on it, so it was off. And Buddy came by and said, "There's an avalanche," turned around and just barely got it started when he got hit in the back. And so was on the edge of the slide enough that he also ultimately was able to dig himself out, but, you know, he was saying, like, here's a guy with no legs and an avalanche coming up behind you. Not a good position to be in.
Sounds like a title of a book.
Both he and his brother were, his brother Joshua was very open to do interviews with a lot of different reporters, and Israel posted on Facebook, like, "We screwed up, and this is how." And both also said that they are going to continue to go out, but, you know, with the understanding that you need to be careful, but you can't, you can't be 100% safe all the time just because it's the world and it's the mountains.
So, Zaz, is it in the area where the Arctic Man's taking place? Is that this weekend, I think, or coming up? Or
on the 9th. The events are the weekend after. But that was kind of what I tried to focus on in my story, is that there will be no official avalanche forecast at Arctic Man this year. They've kind of downsized a little bit. They're not having skiers and snowboarders along with the motorized contestants this year. And there isn't just staffing in the avalanche community to have somebody out there. So it's going to be incumbent on participants to do their own avalanche forecasting.
Okay. There was a second piece there about a bulldozer falling through the ice. Did you have any information about that?
That was out the Manly Winter Road, out by, you know, sort of Fairbanks Way, so an interior.
Okay.
But yeah, there was a. Actually, we may be talking about different things. Like there was a gentleman who was killed in an accident when he was hauling a housing out to a mine site.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, the reason we bring all of these up is because in this transition time, especially toward the end of the winter season, the Alaska Avalanche Center does wonderful work in reminding people and having all kinds of training and so on and so on. But as you've just pointed out and Hales found, nothing works like awareness and being well-equipped and obviously in this case traveling with someone else. Because if you're out there alone, the danger multiplies manifold. Terry?
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about one more story, Zaz, and that's the animal control, which I heard a little bit about at the assembly meeting, but I saw you wrote an article on that. What's the real story on that?
I didn't have a lot of time that day to do a in-depth look at the animal shelter. I just wanted to get the word out.
Yeah.
But it sounds like they are... the budget for the borough is static, and the borough is growing. There are more and more strays in the borough, and so, you know, the animal shelter goes through these kind of boom and bust periods, but early spring is a pretty big period for especially for cats and kittens, litters of kittens. And so right now, at least as of a few days ago, the shelter was full of dogs and kittens, and so they're now waitlisting owner surrenders.
Wow.
Which is problematic. And so, they're encouraging people to reach out to rescues. There are other animal shelters in South Central, but there's not an official partnership, for example, with Anchorage.
So I'm curious, are their employees under a hiring freeze, or are they just understaffed for always for this? Or is this part of attrition? I couldn't quite figure that out, and I didn't get a chance to ask anybody at the assembly meeting. But I know there is a hiring freeze, and they are locking, down all extra money. In fact, they accepted $9,000 in donations that night, ironically, from the community. So I was just curious if this was part of that. It would seem you have to have a sufficient amount of employees to even keep the center open.
Right. I mean, they have enough employees to stay open. I think it's... And again, I didn't have time to really investigate this that day, but they have a static number of people and more and more residents and pets.
Yep.
Well, I'd like to turn to a theme that I found intriguing because I saw a thread running through many, many different developments over the past week, and that is a version of to be or not to be or to do or not to do. And most recently, just popping up yesterday, the president of the University of Alaska system suggested that the programs that had been of concern and were not reaccredited in Anchorage, at the University of Alaska Anchorage, he thought it was and stated that they would not, they did not advocate going forward for reaccreditation. And in fact, was suggesting that they would be proposing that the entire School of Education be closed. I tried to get a sense of what that meant, and perhaps for listeners, and perhaps Oz and Terry, you can throw in here on it, that the University of Alaska is not just the University of Alaska. It's really three different universities under an umbrella arrangement, where the central, the core administrative services happen to be in Fairbanks, but the University of Alaska Anchorage, University of Alaska Southeast are separate entities, but connected. And I think the driver on all of this is the back and forth discussion that's happening at the legislature about funding for the university. I did not see in the Anchorage Daily News article, nor what I've been seeing discussed at Gavel to Gavel. I might have missed something there. The dollar figures, because you're talking about a kind of a strange way of saying, okay, if you're interested in studying to be a teacher and you live in Anchorage, you can still do that in Anchorage, but it will be with a program that's in some form distance delivered, although you may have faculty members you'll be taking courses with, there in Anchorage, but it'll be different. And I think the concern that's arising is the psychological impact that's already hit to say, well, if somebody is working and wants to go to school in Anchorage, which has the largest number of students in education programs that we're talking about, will that mean fewer people will be able to do it? Does this mean there will be an even larger number of people that go outside to be trained? Zaz, anything at all about any of that?
Boy, that's been another reporter's job description. I don't have much information on the education piece.
Yeah, I watched the way too late last night, the House Finance Committee finalized the operating budget, and there was a lot of discussion on the university. I think our local legislators in the Valley voted to cut it pretty drastically. No real mention of the Mount Sioux campus in any of these discussions, but typically Fairbanks legislators really want to keep the budget in there. They've recognized it's an integral part of their community. A lot of support for the university in their community and as Anchorage too. But it sounded to me, and this will go through a lot of iterations now that part is passed. Senate Finance has to pass it, and there's going to have to go to the floors of both bodies, and then they'll have a conference committee on it. But when it left the House last night, it looked to me like they were going to flat fund it back to 2018. And of course, I think the university came in wanting a, they've had some cuts over the years and wanting more of an increase for facility maintenance as well as just kind of keeping competitive with outside universities so we can keep kids here going to school, and they're seeing that drop off. But it's, it's one of those sacred cows, and I think the legislature is being asked to make decisions this year from the budget that the governor gave them, whether ferries are more important than university, whether K through 12 is more important than university. And so, somebody's going to lose in that equation. So I don't see any good scenarios for the university other than maintaining status quo would be their best outcome at this point. And whether that is sufficient, I don't know. It didn't seem like Dr. Johnson was very happy thinking that was a good future for the university, but we'll see.
And the other thing about all of this is, of course, we're in day 82 or so of the 31st session of the 31st Alaska Legislative Organization. And if you watch, and you can see in subcommittees and then committees, and then, of course, there's the putting all of this together and bringing it to the House and Senate floor, there is a volatility that I think Superintendent of Schools Monica Goyette mentioned at one of the board meetings. That she would be down in Juneau. There'd be a decision made to go do something, and then it would move to the next committee, and it would change. And so what we see is kind of an oscillation back and forth between cut it all and bring it back all and maybe cut it a little bit and so on. And it just is such a swirl that I think that many entities, even municipalities, the borough, for example, the borough, other boroughs, North Slope Borough, et cetera, are all looking and saying, just where's this going to finally end up? Are we going to simply shift the payment of the taxation from a potential at the state level to a reality at a local level where people will be directly able to point to the borough as raising taxes rather than the state, and that sort of gets the state off the hook?
Well, I think somebody pointed out to me yesterday, it's sort of interesting to look at the people on just the Finance Committee who have actually ever had to levy a tax on somebody. Some of these legislators have not served on borough assemblies or served on councils that had to raise taxes in their community or had to cut programs in their community and saw what the outcome was. And it's resonating with people now because it's getting more specific. There was a lot of generalities during the elections and a lot of legislators that got elected on that cut, 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 we can cut more and government is overstaffed and governing is hard. Now they're being asked to actually have a fiscal plan to join up departments, get rid of excess And that really goes to the heart of communities. And it's a complete cultural shift the way we've been operating for both communities and the state with no real solid data to tell them what that means to them. And it's going to put some governing people in some pretty uncomfortable positions when there are staunch people that didn't want to raise taxes but now have no way out when they're now looking to fill the hole in huge things like school bonds that now they're going to be responsible for, and their only option is to go to the property taxpayers and ask for more money to do that, because there isn't a B plan.
No, also, two things popped up recently, three actually at the federal level. Two were federal judges that acted, one to say, no, you can't build that road through that wildlife area. And two, you know, that offshore drilling that you were going to do, well, maybe not. And so predictably, there's been a reaction that this is a kind of a federal intrusion into Alaska's state activities. A third federal look at things came from Senator Lisa Murkowski, who expressed concern about what apparently she is hearing has been a convoluted and less than successful process for having funds go to individuals after the recent earthquake in November of 2018. Now, immediately after that event, FEMA, Better Business Bureau, people, were the state, the borough, were all in pointing out that there were ways in which you could get loans and money to begin the process of rebuilding. She was stating, though, and I found I wasn't directly impacted, so I was not I didn't have skin in the game to get a loan or some monies to repair. But what she was obviously saying was, the process is, maybe it's out there, but it's still difficult to understand, and people have been complaining about it. Zaz, do you hear anything about that from anyone that you know who's had a need to get additional funds for rebuilding?
You know, I haven't heard from anybody on that front.
Okay, Terry, nothing?
Yeah, I got lucky. I think that everybody that in my universe was pretty lucky with the earthquake, and it was certainly specific to areas, so more so than others. So I think unless you knew, had friends and family in those really impacted areas, you weren't going to probably hear more anecdotal things. And, you know, and also some of it's sort of out to jury now because things are still fine. And, you know, there may be more there than we know. And that'll be an interesting thing, too, because deadlines, I think, have already come and passed.
In some cases, that has happened. There was a lot of information put out. But I think the point here seems to be that it actually just hasn't quite, worked out as many individuals had found it more difficult to do things. Warm weather. Definitely warm weather happening. Am I right that the Nanana Ice Classic is still in play?
I know. I just turned my tickets in, so I hope so.
Okay. So the AP, the Associated Press, has reported, as we're doing this on Friday, that the annual Alaska Guessing Game is generating, and quoting from their piece, a flurry of late ticket sales. It sounds, Terry, as you've taken advantage of this opportunity, all those people who picked tickets, and the time has gone by. There we go. And this seems to be very different. In part, there's a deadline today. And you pay $250 to guess the day, hour, and minute. Zaz, do you have any tickets bought?
I didn't buy any tickets for the Ice Classic. I'm amazed it's still standing, though.
Yeah.
Pretty listening looking.
For listeners who may have short memories, the event began in 1917 as a bet.
Yeah.
Among, of course, railroad engineers who are waiting to get to work, waiting for the ice to break up. And it's paid a lot of money over the time. So there's a team. I wonder how you get beyond that team. Is a team of three that monitored the tripod 24 hours a day.
Wow.
And the official clock was attached. It's not sitting out there all the time. And the projected temperatures, of course, not only up there, but throughout this area, is 50 degrees. And this could really change things. Just to remind people, the earliest, according to the article, the earliest the tripod has fallen is April 20th. That was in 1940, 1998. But who knows? We'll see what happens.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting.
So one other thing I'd like to mention, because she has been so prominent in the work that we do in reporting what's happening around the valley, Patty Sullivan, a long time, some 12, 13 years or so with the borough in communications, has moved on. And she is now working for ConocoPhillips, I am told. And there was a mention of it at the borough meeting. Terry, what was said about her?
Yeah, I mean, I think Patty was there 13 years is what I'm told. Am I right about that, Zaz?
Yeah, 13 and a half, I think is what she said.
Yeah, and was with public radio before that. Zaz can probably tell this better than I can. And it was a fixture for us, Radio Free Palmer, since we stream all the assembly meetings. So we ran into Patty a lot. And I know Mike was very involved with her on a lot of her shows and a lot of her service to the assembly. But I think, you know, too many miles, not enough smiles. It was time to move on. And she's working for ConocoPhillips in town. She'll join some of the commuters that she's probably written back about at some point in her career. And we wish her the best. I have nothing more than that, unless Zaz knows more.
No, I mean, I certainly don't know more about the recent
this.
But we all reported on the issues that arose during the earthquake when Patty was not doing her usual job of working with the media as the public information officer.
And she has
done an admirable job of in the past.
Right. And I knew her before. I knew her before when she was working for a radio station, I think KSKA, and she would do some significant interviews. I was very much impressed by the quality of her work, because once you get into this, you realize interviewing people requires both style and ability to connect and ability to get to the heart and report matters in a proper way. So we wish her the best.
Right.
I know she will continue to
do it. And it's a very stressful time for people in public service right now, as we're all trying to determine what's the future for public service. So hopefully she'll have a little more stability in her life as she journeys forward.
Okay. Well, I want to thank Terry Snyder for coming in here today, out of the wind and into the sun, coming through the window. Thank you, Terry.
Enjoy the spring.
And I want to thank Zaz Hollander for taking the time to call in. You're calling in today from where?
Up in Willow.
Willow. Okay. And you've got that experience of a little bit of a lingering winter, and that's a good thing. All right. We'll be back next week for another edition of Valley Edition. Thank you.
You've been listening to Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Matsu Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky. Valley Edition is a production of Radio Free Palmer, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska. The views and opinions of hosts or guests do not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, this station, or its underwriters. If you have any comments or questions about this program, email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.